Everybody, and welcome to Kayfabe or Die. I'm the Giz, and joining me as always is my partner in crime, Johnny Dane.
¿Cómo estás?
I imagine everyone is doing okay, and hopefully everyone's doing fine and is keeping nice and safe and is, you know, staying indoors when they can.
Just
and you know,
living
not
in
venturing
a box.
Outdoors too long.
I'm living in a virtual box,
living in a heavy metal box for some of us, but anyway, yes. As always, because of the way things are, there is all kinds of interesting things that are happening in the world of wrestling, which my co-host has probably covered earlier on in the week.
No, the show didn't actually happen.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, in that case, last week saw an awful lot of people getting fired from WWE. And one of those people who actually put up a rather tearful message on social media was Drake Maverick, who thanked WWE for the opportunities they gave him and said that the matches that he's going to be wrestling could be the last that he ever does. So that was
wasn't
thing.
That last week?
Yeah,
oh no, we covered it last week. I thought you meant this week. You said there was news this week.
Well,
it's relevant to this week's shows. Yes.
Yeah, and I wasn't sure how much you'd gone into it because there were still the firings and stuff were still happening last week. Well, they weren't. Because it turns out they all happened at once, and then they just staggered how they released people finding out about it.
For the sake of their advertising.
Yeah, pretty much. But so that brings us up to this week's NXT, which starts off with Finn Balor mysteriously missing. Apparently there was some kind of incident that we never actually find out any details on over the course of the show.
There's a lot of perplexed referees, and there is a jacket, and that is all.
But we get no it gets mentioned later on, but we actually get no progress on that story. So unless it's some part of Killer Cross or what's his name, it's not Killer Cross. It's something else. Cross.
I didn't pick up on it.
No. It's not Killer Cross. But we're just going to call him We're just going to call him Mr.
Cross.
Mr. Cross. For now,
I think it's going to get that way. I think.
Yes. But anyway, I think maybe, you know, it was supposed to be him, or I thought maybe it was supposed to be him or something like that. But so that happens. And as a result, Velveteen Dream feels like he's been stood up by Finn Balor. Yeah. He's all dressed up to the dance and nowhere to play with.
He's dressed up literally to dance with Finn Balor, quite appropriately dressed, relatively reminiscent of Finn Balor, and doing his own little flair on the Finn Balor arm, what we call it, the arm
Finn
corner
entrance.
Dance.
The arm corner dance,
because he does it a little bit differently in the arm corner than he does when he's coming down to the ring.
Okay, fair enough.
But Velveteen was doing it this way, opposed to this way. Which, for our radio show listeners, you can't see what I just did there.
Velveteen starts going into a promo where he's on about going to new levels and having to face new demons, and I have a feeling that he probably rehearsed it with a crowd in mind. You know, because it got like that kind of to the stage where you're kind of like he's expecting people to chant or something.
I don't think so. I think that's just Velveteen Dream. I don't need a crowd there. I'll do it as if they are. If you look at his behavior through the years, like that's such a Velveteen Dream thing to do, to be like, say infamous line, wait for applause, and carry on. Let's go.
Yeah, but that's the waiting for an actual applause.
Yeah,
this is my point.
Like,
he does these things.
Yeah, but he's
with
doing
the notion
it like
of,
blah, 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 blah. Insert applause now and continue on, because it's safe to assume they were going to applaud anyway, so I'm going to react as if they were.
Anyway, this gets interrupted by Adam Cole, who makes his triumphant return after weeks of self-isolation.
Yeah, it looked so hard self-isolating sitting by that pool.
Yeah, so he basically distracts Velveteen Dream long enough for Roderick Strong and Bobby Fish to come in and waylay
I won't lie to you. I feel era are involved with the Finn Balor thing.
Maybe,
the reason being, because Adam Cole came out and blatantly said, we had nothing to do with that Finn Balor thing. And if anything has taught me, if Adam Cole says he came out and had nothing to do with something, most probably he did
He's probably the one who did it. Yeah, well, anyway, Undisputed Era start kicking the crap out of Velveteen Dream until Keith Lee appears to basically monster his way through all three of them.
Pouncy, shoulder blocky, pouncy kills.
Yeah, which leads to a match between Velveteen tagging up with Keith Lee against...
You nearly said teaganing.
No, I never nearly said teaming, but yeah, tagging. To go up against an Undisputed Era later on the night. Funnily enough, speaking of teaganing, Tegan Fox, Tegan Knox.
We had tagging Knox teaganing with Shotzi Blackheart.
Tegan Knox tagging with Shotzi Blackheart.
That's what I said. Tegan Knox teaganing with Shotzi Blackheart.
Against Dakota Kai and Raquel Gonzalez.
The monster of a woman that is Raquel Gonzalez.
Yeah. Amazonian, yes.
Like, you could spray her green, have quite a good She-Hulk for future movies and things like that.
Yeah.
I would hope that you... Oh, no, yeah, no, they would spray you green. She's got that right... Like, she's not just big, do you know what I mean? She's, like, perfectly in proportion, but in massive size. You know, so
I agree.
Yeah, no, but she's just a big hulking beast of a woman. Like, she's very important. Like, anyway, she was a good foot taller than the ref.
I don't think she was that.
He was
much
up to her chin.
That's not a foot. That's a hand.
You can just tell because if you even look at the size of her head compared to other people, you're just like a bigger specimen of human being.
In any case, this is a really good match where Shotzi and Tegan displayed a surprising amount of teamwork, I guess.
Yeah, they're on page with each other 100%. I will say I was slightly upset that Tegan didn't come down in the tank. I was hoping for a duel.
Or on the back, or maybe just standing on the back of Shotzi's tank.
I'm remiss to say, because I don't like admitting when I'm wrong, but upon watching the actual entrance in the tank... I don't think the tank, I agree with you from last week's show, I don't think the tank would have held up both of them, but two tanks would have been equally cool. And then they both crash into the opposing ring steps. Life would have been grand. But anyway, I digress.
Yeah. The match itself was pretty good. Like I said, Tegan and Shotzi showing a surprising amount of teamwork for people that have basically just gotten together.
I believe. Yeah.
Cohesiveness. Raquel and Dakota, on the other hand, kind of gotten each other's way once or twice, but then kind of pulled it together with the sneaky stuff.
That's because for some reason in this match,
when they're doing proper tag team stuff as like wrestling, it's kind of like not there, but when they're just being sneaky,
a lot of that came down to there was a weird, and they even brought it up in commentary, there was a weird change in Dakota Kai's personality where they were like, she's a lot more jump in the ring and go for them than she normally is, which I was like, I think that's where the foibles happened between the two of them, because Raquel was kind of like, oh, I'm obviously going to handle the power, and then Dakota Kai is like, no, I'm going to go in and kick some people in the face, and then she's like, you're in my way, bitch, and then she's like, yeah.
Unfortunately, though, it wasn't the lack of cohesiveness to a degree between Raquel and Dakota wasn't quite enough to stop Raquel from powering her way to a victory.
Because there may have been a lack of cohesiveness between all of them, but the sneaky powers were still high. The sneaky force was strong with them.
Yep, and Raquel's like actual powerful pick you up, drop you on your head
that
force.
That was terrifying, I have to say, because I was like, oh, that's going to be a one-arm choke. No, it's a one-arm powerbomb. Sorry, never mind. Okay, whoopsie-doodle. That, because her legs were all splayed everywhere. That wasn't a choke slam. It was like, oh, Lord. Dear, oh dear. Actually, this has been a good week. If you like seeing people get absolutely mangled by larger people, AEW and NXT has been a fantastic week for wrestling.
That wasn't a wrestling match. That was a shot put contest with one entrant.
We'll get to that in a while. It's just Raquel was like, she was my Wardlow of NXT this week. I think we had the Gargano promo next.
No. Up next we got, and this was kind of a weird one, and it's the reason that I mentioned at the start of the show. Up next we had a recap of Drake Maverick's video, the one that he himself put out on Instagram, thanking everybody.
They're very much playing up this as a storyline now, where it's literally like he's got three matches to win a championship or leave, essentially. And now I'm like, is this a fucking worker or what the fuck is going on?
My PC died, so I wasn't able to watch this the way that I normally would. And the version that I was able to watch, it was so weird, man. Because we get that, right? We get that video package. And then it's like they cut to an ad break. And when they come up, it's, and you can join us to celebrate 25 years of Triple H this Friday. I'm like, what? What the hell?
I did not get that.
You horrible bastards.
I did not get that, thankfully, because I'd have been like. Hang on.
I was just like, what?
There's a chance I may have got that, actually. There was an ad break and I went out for coffee.
Yeah, because you were saying that it happens again later on, or it happened for me later on. You were saying there was a Robert Stone promo, but I didn't see it, but they were talking about it when they came back from an ad break. So, okay. I don't know. But like I said, that was just, it was weird for me because it was just like, mopey, teary, Maverick is like, you heartless bastards. And then they come back and say, like, celebrate 25 years of Triple H.
I should point out Robert Stone brand promo. It wasn't him cutting a promo. It was him talking up talking up Chelsea and talking up the two.
Yeah, that's what he does. It's what he does.
He's the mouth, she's the muscle.
Now, anyway, after seeing this, we are led into the first of, I think it's three matches that they have for the Cruiserweight and their Cruiserweight tournament.
You have Drake Maverick.
This first match is Jake Atlas versus Drake Maverick.
And then you had Jack Gallagher versus...
Well, that was... No, that was
oh,
that
yeah,
was
I know. I was, oh, no, sorry. What was the other one? Oh, yeah, sorry. It was Phantasm versus...
Yeah, that's the third one. And before we have... Yeah, we'll get into them as they come up. This is Jake Atlas making his debut against Drake Maverick. This is a really good match. And I was kind of... After they showed the Drake Maverick video thing and all the rest of it, I was kind of like, surprised that he lost.
I feel it's going to be an underdog.
It wasn't a handy victory.
Oh, it was a very hard-fought victory, and Drake really put up. Yeah. I have to say, like, I've been a big fan of Drake Maverick since the Rockstar Spud days. Like, he didn't get to wrestle loads in TNA because he was mostly kind of EC3's little henchman kind of. He was henchman and there was respect initially, and then you know the way those storylines go, the relationship began toxic and he just looked at him like a little bitch, and then you got the really cool storyline where he went up against EC3 and it was gold. It was really good and I love Drake Maverick and it's nice to see him in the ring. But I have to say, I'm a little bit, is this a fucking work or what the shit is going on? I don't know. Or is it they're just giving him a little bit of a highlight as he goes out?
Here's my opinion, right? Because we have seen WWE do this before. Now, I admit NXT is a different ballgame, but
it's the same payroll.
They've never been afraid to... Exactly, and they've never been afraid to kind of... Well, we did that up there, so why don't we do that down here? We know how much WWE likes to fudge the kayfabe line when it comes to reality and storylines and all the rest of it.
Yes, because it's sports entertainment.
So, with all of the attention, and they say it straight away that the Drake Maverick video got a lot of social media attention. So, with that,
When you see a guy go online and pour his soul out, you're going to have a lot of attention drawn to it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. So, you have to wonder how quickly they decide to turn around and kind of go, okay, Drake, look, just letting you know, we're not changing what's going to happen, but we're going to play it up.
Yeah, you're going to go out looking like Rocky, because remember, Rocky didn't need to win, if you know what I mean.
He did in the second one,
yeah. But like, I mean, the thing that made Rocky famous was he still got knocked out. Staying, but he came back and he went for it again. And second one, he teed off.
He wasn't knocked out in the first one. It was a ref's decision, wasn't it?
You know what I mean? Yeah, he got his head knocked in, like, do you know what I mean? And he was very much knocked out. It's just that his head was made of concrete and keeping him down while knocked out is two different things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sandman.
Yes. Perfect example within the realm of sports that we're talking about. Sandman. Yeah.
Stay down. Stay down. Stay. Oh, for fuck's sake. Down.
Yeah. Anyway, Mick Foley thought he was going to have to nail gun him to the floor at one stage. We'll just nail gun the shirt down. Yeah. Problem solved.
It's not working. We'll just nail down the hand.
It's not like he's going to know.
Anyway,
as Giz was saying, strangely enough, Drake Maverick took the loss in this.
Yeah, Atlas wins it. They're doing this thing at the end of each of these cruiserweight matches whereby they're blonde, the little blonde, cute one that they have doing the interviews, whose name I cannot remember. Young. Basically, not Renee Young. Talks to everyone kind of how it went.
I really like this. Cool, he was torn.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. It's kind of like, I won, but at the same time, I feel so shitty for Maverick.
He even says on Mike, he's like, I'm kind of rooting for him. You know, I was like, what a weird mentality to go into a match against someone with. I hope you win, bro.
I was ready for him, but I'm kind of rooting for him, and it's so weird, and that just, I felt bad, but at the same time, I won. It's a nice dichotomy.
It humanized people outside of the normal characterization realm that they're normally in. It really made it, it made the real life issues with Drake look like they have genuinely, which they have, and not just Drake, like with everyone, which they have, affected a lot of people's mentality in WWE, because it's hard. You're seeing a lot of people you know and take a walk.
Yeah, and just because Atlas is victorious doesn't mean he has to be a fucking asshole about Maverick's loss. In fact,
he was very torn. He still did his little "I'm great" speech kind of thing, because in a way that I thought was great, where it was like, oh, I'm contractually obliged to do this kind of thing at the end, so I guess I'll fucking do it. I'm here to win, blah, 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 blah. But he just, before he did that, he was like, God damn it, I was really rooting for him. And you can see he was trying to do the I'm a winner, I'm going to take this thing promo, but his heart wasn't in it, you know? Yeah. And I thought it was really good.
Yeah.
It was really good. It was really good.
Let's see. Sorry, yeah, I think up next we had the Damian Priest promo where he's basically...
I have to tip back in this to something that you and I have had arguments about over the while. Do you remember when I was saying he's a vampire and you were like, no, they've never portrayed him as a vampire? Did you see at the end of the promo when he smiled? He has fangs, man. Genuine fangs.
Or just sharp lines. No,
because I'm aware that that is a thing, believe me, but... these looked proper, like, you know. I nearly pissed myself with joy when I saw it. I was like, yes, we're yet to see him in daylight. He has the fucking bitches thing going on and the limo thing. And he's got fucking fangs now. Maybe it's one of those things where they're like, maybe we just never need to fully take a nod to it. Do you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
He gets up from taking some punishment inexplicably, kind of Undertaker style, and they're like, well, there's always been a dark blah about him. But I don't know. I could be reading more into it, but he's fucking looking very vampire-y the more we go on.
In any case, his promo is all about how Keith Lee has basically been picking his own opponents when it comes to the North
Valid
American
point,
Championship.
By the way.
Based on the fact that Keith Lee knows he can beat these people. When Damian Priest has faced him, it hasn't been Keith Lee's choice, because deep down inside, Keith Lee fears Damian Priest.
I know Keith Lee doesn't fear Damian Priest, but I have to say he did a good heel promo of picking up on some things and twisting them to suit the narrative that he's trying to put across.
Yeah. Next up, we had the second of our Cruiserweight Championship matches or tournament matches for tonight, as Kushida takes on Tony Nese. This was bloody great, because I think it was one of the few times since he's gotten to NXT that I've really seen Kushida being Kushida, like the way that he made his bones in Japan. And it was like himself and Tony kind of went, you know what, this is our kind of match.
Very
Let's
much
just
their kind of
let
match. This was a cracker.
Couple of stiff shots. Yeah, in there.
Those guys don't mind taking a hit. Do you know what I mean? It's a bloody cracker.
Yeah.
And can I say, was it just me, or was Tony Nese looking even more jacked than normal?
More action figure like?
Yeah.
Man, Tony Nese comes out there looking like he's sculpted out of plastic from the 1980s.
Yeah, but I mean, he looked especially like, do you remember when they did the wrestler He-Man version of the toys?
He probably saw it and went, that's not a six-pack. This
ten
is
pack.
A six-pack.
It's Dude, a ten-pack. He's literally has, there's five either side.
No, bear with me. Dude, these are plastic, yeah, and these are fucking steel.
Clang! this was a corker of a match. There was loads of high-flying stuff. It was fast-paced. Nice bit of technical grappling going on as well, because both guys are quite adept at that. But long and the short of it was, they got up.
That finish was
They got up to the top rope, and it looked like Tony Nese was going for some sort of top rope powerbomb or some flippy shit. And Kushida, you just saw him get the half of the arm lock in, There was a massive flip.
Yeah, the hoverboard lock.
It's not the hoverboard lock till he's off the ground and he does the flip. It's just an arm. It's just the...
Pretty sure he was off the ground and they did a flip.
Afterwards, he was... this is what I'm saying. He was trying... He was in the process of having the hoverboard lock in. He had the arm lock in. He was yet to get it fully cinched with the legs and the whole caboodle. And then next thing you know, you just see this big lump of man meat fly through the fucking air, land in the hoverboard lock. And Tony Nese is not having a nice time of it at all.
No.
At all.
No, not at all. Nese taps out and Kushida would take the victory, putting him also on. It's an interesting, I like how, I actually kind of like the round robin tournament because it gives everyone kind of, everyone's still at a
everyone
chance
gets
just because you lost one.
Yeah, everyone
mean
gets a shot at everyone. And it works that way. Do you know what I mean? And it's good because sometimes it's like, I mean, you have to take into account, say, in the Drake Maverick match, Tony or Jake Atlas, you could say he's a bit bigger than him. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Say if you get Drake Maverick in with Kushida or something, there could be some fucking wizardry going on. I can't see Kushida taking a hit off Drake Maverick, though. I won't look. Well, you wouldn't know.
Yeah.
You wouldn't know.
Never know. Right.
Is it the Gargano promo next?
Yes.
God.
No. That's not God for a little bit. You're going to love this next. However, it is a promo that you love. As backstage, not Renee Young, talks to a very, very, very baked out of his gourd, Matt Riddle.
I meant to point this out when we got started getting into the NXT thing. We're going to have to start rounding off NXT soon, around the 20-minute mark. But
crap. Okay.
I was like, we've learned several things about people through NXT this week. Like, say, for instance, Killer Cross and his missus, where everyone thought she was going to be kind of desexualized compared to what a normal character is. That's definitely not happening. We saw the leather boot. We saw her in the car. This is the next bit where I don't know what sort of relationship is going on between Matt Riddle and fucking Pete and Timothy Thatcher. But everybody was goddamn beautiful. I agree with you.
I love looking into your blue eyes. They remind me of Pete. Yeah. My eyes are brown.
I was actually going to point that out as well, that I was like, is it just me? Or I know he smokes loads of weed, but like obviously when you're live and stuff, the kayfabe stoner thing's there. I have to say, Matt Riddle looked genuinely baked off his fucking tits.
He did. Okay, yeah. Since we're getting caught for time, we can't stay on stuff. We got to move in. Next up, we had a match between Mia Yim and Jesse Kamea. Anyway, this was a good, decent match. Yim would take the victory.
Charlotte
and at the
Flair
end of it,
came down a bit of biatch.
Charlotte Flair would come down and basically tell Mia Yim that she's going to make Mia Yim a superstar by giving her the opportunity against her.
Yes. Yeah.
Finally.
And Mia Yim looked impressed.
Afterwards, we had At Home with the Garganos. This was goddamn.
This is another
amazing
section where we learned some things about people in WWE or in NXT. One.
Is this a full heel turn, or is this merely the two of them waking up and kind of going,
better
you
question.
Know what? This
were they
the way
was there,
is. So we're
better question.
Do this
was there
one.
Acid in the food they were eating? Because there was all these like acid trips when they started talking evil that I was like, I actually swear to God they're tripping. And also another weird thing that it was like, what sort of relationship do they have at home? Where Candice LeRae is like, no, today I eat first. And Gargano is like, yeah, you earned it. You can eat first. And I was like, what the fuck?
One that realizes they're on camera and that it's a metaphor for their entire careers.
The name of the show is Kayfabe or Die Man, so I got to work within the realms of this is happening.
Okay, fair enough. I thought this was great.
No,
this
don't get me wrong. I loved every second of it. It was dark.
King and queens of NXT,
it was
bring
dark,
it on.
It was disturbing. None of what they said was untrue.
Like I said last week, and like I said before, technically speaking, everyone's like, oh, Gargano's a heel. He's not. He's actually not. People just forgot that Ciampa was the heel, and then he came back. Everyone loved him, and Johnny Stander going, fuck, lads? Have you forgotten all the shit
that's,
he did to us?
Like, you can't disagree with that. It's literally, you break your neck, and all of a sudden you're a goddamn good guy because you come back within 12 months? Not cool, man.
Next up, we had El Hijo del Fantasma in his match against Jack Gallagher. Once again, a cruiserweight tournament match. This was bloody great. And I think Gallagher's first match back since he got himself all tatted up. He is covered in tattoos now.
Yeah, they kind of made comment on that. They were like, when stuff's not going well for you, Jack Gallagher has done the smartest thing any wrestler is able to do, which is change up your style, reinvent yourself, change your look, and come back. And he had a bad attitude when he was leaving, and he's come back with a look that matches it.
Yep, unfortunately, it wouldn't be quite enough to beat the debuting Phantasma, who is a bit of a legend down in Mexico.
His whole family are legends down in Mexico.
Before we get into the final match, because I feel we should talk about it, it's worth noting that after all of this, El Phantasma was out in the parking lot, and much as what has happened to other luchadors in NXT, along came what we suspect may be Lucha Underground. They attempted to grab Phantasma. It did not go well for them, and they scampered.
Well done to Byron Saxton on commentary, because I loved when he was like, what the fuck is going on in that parking lot? I was like, thank you. I'm glad someone's finally asking what the fuck is going on. It's kind of like, I've seen three people get kidnapped in about 2 weeks now, and nothing's happened. Do you know?
It's the Lucha Mafia or something like.
It's got to be King Cuerno, man.
That would be great. That
would be great. Lucha anyway, War.
Finally, in NXT this week, we had Velveteen Dream tagging with Keith Lee to take on the Undisputed Era's Adam Cole and Roderick Strong. This was great fun. Now, I did have one small bit of a problem. Damian Priest comes down and interferes. Yes. That's cool. Damian Priest whips out the nightstick. Damian Priest clearly, even in the replay when you show it, hits Keith Lee in the fucking chest. God's damned, somebody gave Byron Saxton and Tom Phillips glasses, or else let us see what reality they're looking into, because all they kept saying was how it was a hit, two hits directly to the throat. Lads, I've got an anatomy book that I think you need to look up, because I hate to tell you, you're actually commenting on a sport that requires you to know a little bit about body parts. That was his big fucking pectoral muscle. It's hard to miss. It's the size of some people's faces. It's certainly the size of, like, it's certainly a larger target than his throat, although his throat would be a pretty big target. The same angle twice, and you can see that's his chest. Like, it, don't get me wrong, it'd hurt, but that's his chest. Why are you doing... But apart from that, this was fun because Velveteen decided that he was going to take on the Undisputed Era on his own, and then from out of nowhere came the goddamn serial killer.
I'm a happy camper. Dexter Morgan and the guy from Billy Loomis. Or Doctor... Billy Loomis is also named after the doctor from Halloween.
In either case, Velveteen Dream eventually realizes that he has, like, this staring sociopath.
I've got a vampire behind me, and I've got a fucking psychopath standing in front of me. It's not a good Wednesday.
Well, the psychopath is asking for a tag, so maybe it is a good Wednesday, because in comes Dexter Loomis and just starts wailing into everybody.
I told you.
I told you he was going to be great.
Imagine if him and Killer Cross hook up as a faction. Sorry, that's the wrong laugh. It should be more of a...
Yes.
I think evil laughing is a good way to cut to a song. Or is that just me?
Anyway, end of this sees Dream taking the victory in what was a good, bizarre, but interesting main event for NXT this week. So, all things being equal, we're going to cut into Drake Maverick's theme song, because we feel that his is probably the underlying underdog story that hopefully we see get built up, and maybe, I believe, because there was a good interview with him on the steps afterwards. I actually give that man an Oscar. I think he might be basically going, you know what, I'm here, let's see if I can impress people enough that they go, you know what, Drake, come on back.
I got a TV show for you. Follow me.
In any case. So yeah, Drake Maverick's theme song, and we should be back. Welcome back. That was Drake Maverick's theme song, because hopefully over the course of the Cruiserweight tournament in NXT, he can prove that he is the man and maybe get his job back, like, legit.
Yep.
Because, I don't know, there's a lot of people saying that it was in bad taste to kind of really hype the fact that he did that tearful social media post, and then to have him
logistically, he really put himself in a position where that was had to happen, you know, because he literally went, these are going to be my last three matches in NXT and WWE, and I'm going to make the most of them.
There
was so much highlight on it, I don't think they could have ignored it and just moved on and made no mention of it, is what I'm saying.
It is, I'll be honest, right, I haven't seen Rockstar Spud or Drake Maverick or whatever you want to call him wrestling that often, because I'm only familiar with him being in NXT and then the little bit of stuff that he's done in the Cruiserweight in 205 Live. After seeing him in NXT this week and after seeing the way he put himself across and all the rest of it, because I'd only seen the 24/7 when he was like being cuckolded the whole fucking time.
If you
want to
see some good stuff, watch. There was a feud when he was the manager between him and then we have to get on to AEW because that's the section we're in.
I was just going to say that I hope after all this,
there's
he gets
a feud
his job back.
Between him and Mike Kanellis when Mike kind of heel turned on 205 Live. That is freaking gold. Check it out. Worth it.
Okay. Anyway, AEW opens up this week with another one of Cody Rhodes' sickeningly sweet babyface
promos.
From
Cody Cave. Sickeningly sweet? He looked like fucking Bruce Wayne. What are you on about? He had every guy up in a separate screen. He's going through their flaws and their good points and everything. He looked like fucking Bruce Wayne. Why is he in a cave?
And the way the promo... He's not. He's
it
in his
doesn't
office.
Doesn't look like an office. It looks like an underground bunker.
Because its walls are brown.
It looks like an underground bunker. I'm telling you.
So does where you are right now.
Mine is an underground
bunker.
Well,
you and I both know the truth. Uh-huh. Anyway, so after his typical, you know, I'm the good guy, I have an upward struggle, I
fucking
need this
elevator.
Belt. Aaron Anderson is even saying, I need this belt. Whoa. After the promo, we get into AEW. Sorry, for those of you listening on the radio, I'm watching as my co-host slowly rises and falls because I think he accidentally hit the switch on his chair and dropped
my stupid
down.
Bunker elevator isn't working.
But yeah, AEW once again being done fantastically, commentated by Le Champion without a belt, Chris Jericho, and Tony Schiavone, or Schiavone as Jericho likes to call him. But yeah, it kicks off with Sammy Guevara versus Darby Allin in their TNT tournament qualifier, because the AEW are also doing a tournament at the moment. It's funny that AEW start doing a tournament, then NXT starts doing a tournament.
In fairness, NXT's tournament, I think, had to happen by necessity due to the fact that their champion is stuck in Ireland.
Fair enough. And as we know, as we've seen in the past, necessity often makes WWE cool. This was a really good match because Sammy Guevara and Darby Allin just kicked the ever-loving smeg out of each other.
It was great.
It was great fun.
Darby kind of getting a little bit heely, literally, actually, come to think of it, near the end of it, where he just starts smashing Sammy's foot.
Darby's always had that attitude when it comes to what he does in the ring.
It's just, I don't know.
I thought it was great the way like he ripped off the foot or the shoe and the sock, and he really worked the foot, took away the it was good. It was fun. So, Darby Allin took up the victory there. So he qualifies into the next round of the tournament.
Match, I have to say.
Up next we had Allin Angels taking on Kenny Omega. This was basically just kind of a, I'm not going to call it a squash match for Kenny, because that would
Kenny,
be unfair.
Commentary actually explained it best, where they were like, sorry, I say commentary. It was Chris Jericho explained it best, where he was like, Kenny's a really nice guy, to his detriment sometimes, because he came in here and he was like, I'll go 50% and I'll let Angels have an actual, get a bit of offense in and look good or whatever. Angels took a little bit too much, and then Kenny's fucking switch got hit.
Kenny hit the fucking switch. Yeah.
So,
you can actually
dude, Jericho's
see the
so
point.
Good on commentary at pointing out little cool tweaky things like that.
You could actually see the point where Kenny just went, fuck it.
Okay. Okay. We're trying to make me look stupid now, are we? Are we trying to make me look stupid now? Okay. Knee to face. Knee to face.
Yeah, knee to face.
And we also had Taz at a later stage in the show doing these play by play explanations of how the
Kenny is and how he moves.
Yeah,
how he
I've never
moves.
Seen knee to face explained in such an in-depth manner. If you look at the front torque on the leg and the way he
look
cocks
at the way
it,
his
like
leg
a shotgun,
goes up, the height, and then he twists in.
It was great. It was really cool. And if you want to have someone do a play-by-play of how a move should effectively fuck someone up, Taz is the man.
Especially a suplex.
He comes up in a suplex spot later on as well.
Up next, we got a little bit of Broken Brilliance. Yeah.
This was interesting I have to...
Yeah. As I suppose Damascus addressed this
first. And he explained why the La Asshole or La Ass The whole of the asses. That's it. A whole of the asses.
Since he was unwilling to even acknowledge the challenge, then by all means, send Sammy Guevara, send whoever you want, bring them down to the Hardy compound. Yeah, that was it. The false god. And then, interestingly, he kind of switched gears and went, however, I feel that my vessel wishes to address the whole of the asses, so I give it over to the one known as Matt Hardy. And then you have Matt.
And do you know
Matt.
What I like about this, especially, is it's retconned the Matt was teleporting 3 weeks ago thing to Matt's just batshit fucking crazy. Which is fine. Which that's what the Broken Hardy thing always was just Matt snapped like a dry, brittle twig. That's why he was called Broken Matt Hardy.
So while it seems Damascus is now happy enough to break whatever member of the Inner Circle is willing to turn up, Matt is still focused in on Jericho and is kind of talks up Jericho and talks up himself, talks up the relationship and how well they know each other. But yeah, no, it was good. It was good.
They are the four pillars of AEW. This was good. Yeah.
Up next, we had a match that was built last week as Jimmy Havoc takes on Orange Cassidy.
Orange Cassidy got murdered until Jimmy Havoc made the mistake of putting Orange Cassidy's hands in his pockets, which evidently is the source of his power.
Yeah, pretty much.
I'm throwing this out there, and if any other wrestling podcasts or wrestling fans listen to us, feel free to comment below if you think it's true. I think he's got little mini defibrillators in his pocket, and you put the hand in, and it's just that he is the eccentric slot, do you know? And if you need to get something of that mentality rocking, 3,000 volts into the hips will get you going. Do you know what I mean? So I think it's literally like, okay, my hands are in my pockets now. Well, while they're in there, blah, 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 and then, you know?
Unfortunately, however, Orange's occasional bursts of wrestling madness were not quite enough to beat Jimmy Havoc's sheer aggression. Plus, there was the little bits of best friends were down at side, Kip Sabian and Penelope. Yeah.
Orange Cassidy won the match, you know that, yeah? No. Orange Cassidy won and then Havoc just drilled him after the match. So Penelope came up to do a distraction and Chucky T came over and tried to pull her off the apron but accidentally pulled her down into a sexy leg split. So then Orange Cassidy was behind Jimmy Havoc and Jimmy Havoc got distracted. Jimmy Havoc got pulled into a roll-up or kind of like an old schoolboy pin. And he won. And then Jimmy Havoc hit him with that hooked double arm DDT thing that he does.
I'd written down W and then looked back up, saw Jimmy kicking the shit out of Cassidy and went, yeah, that's right. Jimmy won the match.
Yeah, no. It was Orange Cassidy won with a sneaky roll up.
I meant to write Jimmy fucking jumps Orange, but yeah. So I think next week is next week is going to be Jimmy Havoc and Kip Sabian.
Against,
Kip Sabian.
Best friends. Yeah. I love that theme tune. It's catchy.
I think next we had the Scorpio Sky backstory part one.
This was great.
Yeah, Scorpio is just giving us basically giving us the origins of how he got into the business. He was always wanting to be a wrestler. His mother encouraged him, always said that there was something about him, and so he put everything he could into it, and this was kind of good, much like we saw with Keith Lee a few weeks back on NXT. This was kind of good character building,
and it also let people know how long Scorpio Sky's in there, because I remember there was I can't even remember the name of the wrestling channel that used to be on like one of those live TV streaming apps and stuff, but I used to watch that like 15 years ago, and Scorpio Sky was doing stuff really young back then.
It was called the Wrestling Channel. It.
Yeah.
Philemon.
That was boys it. Used to be on that Philemon app.
Oh, never mind. Never mind.
No, maybe, it probably was. Okay. It used to have that Wrestling Society X and everything on it.
Yes, we had it on Sky Digital. We got the...
If we ever do get stuck for content, you know, with the current issues that are going on outside, that's a TV show I wouldn't mind doing some reviews of. Wrestling Society.
It lasted a season.
We do it episode by episode the same way we would do.
Okay.
Wrestling
that's
Society
that,
X. Okay.
Anyway, back to the stuff that's still going. Up next, we had the one man shot put contest as Wardlow did his best to see how far he could throw
this
Lee Johnson
was
across.
Fucking terrifying.
The answer to that question is fuck.
This was terrifying.
I can't call it suplexes because they weren't suplexes. They suplexes, were suplex throws.
They're called release suplexes.
That still implies that Wardlow is actually going with it, but he wasn't. He was just...
Well, if you look at, say, a release belly to belly with Taz, he doesn't... Or something. I'm only...
Taz's body...
Still, yeah.
When you do a suplex, your body moves with your opponents.
I've got it. How about we call it aggressive relocation?
It's a shot put contest.
Wardlow repeatedly... aggressively relocated this man from one side of the ring to the other with an impressive amount of power. Like, even Jericho pointed out that he was like, man, I haven't seen someone toss someone around like that since Taz, and Taz didn't even have the power that this man has. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that was, yeah.
His exact words were, Taz used to be a fucking machine back in his day, but he did not have that power behind him.
And the thing is, after the first shot put attempt, everyone, heel and fucking face crowd, you know, both sides, the good... everyone just went, oh, and went completely silent as this continued. I think someone said him out of his misery,
Jericho,
at one point.
Seeing as you said Gun Club, by the way, I love how Jericho's building a feud with Billy Gunn somehow. He just hates the Gun Club now.
And
do you remember he called them the Gun Brothers there at one stage, and I was like, it confused me. I was like, I was pretty sure it was his son. Wasn't he Son Gunn? Yeah, I know. Those goddamn Gunn brothers.
Anyway, needless to say that Wardlow won the match after his F-55. Calling it an F-20 is too small. He picked that guy up, threw him off his shoulder. The guy did a spin in the air and then
I have
landed.
Seen Lesnar F-5 someone like that once. I think it was that.
Was it the one-legged guy?
I think it may have been the one-legged guy. Do you remember? He threw him through the air like a fucking spinning top.
Yes, he did. So after that terrifying display, we had a brief Brody Lee. Sorry.
You have a gent who was a sporting star and really good at American football, and he has to go out because of an injury, and his girlfriend leaves him because he's not a famous football star anymore. And he's feeling a bit remorse, and he's feeling a bit down and out, and he's seen a website, and that website is Join the Dark Order.
And so he goes in and he has a nice little sit-down meeting with Mr. Brody Lee, who understands everything, and then asks him, you know, a couple of questions.
The most important questions, which are, how tall are you? I'm 6'2". Okay, that's good. How heavy are you? 230.
I can make something with you.
You're tall and big. Yep, you're tall and big. I like that.
Gee, I wonder what that was. So, yeah, after that, we got to see Mr. Brody Lee in action against Justin Law. Poor Justin Law.
Man.
Who killed him last week or the week before? Somebody ate him the last time he was out.
Same thing happened to Adam Angels as well. Do you remember he was the second guy up against Archer?
Yeah, that was it, Archer.
Yeah. Where Jericho didn't even bother committing the guy's name to memory because he was like, that man dead. He's the Angels, Angles, whatever it is, he's fucking gone. I'm never going to need to use it again.
At least he got a match this week. Justin Law just got stomped.
Justin Law got straight up murdered. But man, that clothesline at the end of it. Especially watched during the slow-mo replay because I was like, okay, which one of them slapped where to make the hit happen? And it was like, no, it was Brody Lee's face or Brody Lee's arm cracking that guy across the face. That's what it was. Whoa. Murdered.
Yeah.
And then he went out because they've been trying to recruit Marco Stunt for a while. So he's been eyeballing Dark Order. They tried getting a mask on him.
I thought he just wanted to eat Stunt.
No, they tried getting a mask on him ages ago and he refused, and there was a whole fight between them and Lucha House Party, which I'd imagine why Brody Lee is like, you.
I believe you mean a Jurassic Express.
What did I say?
Lucha House Party.
I totally meant Jurassic Express. 100%.
Yeah,
you can see the confusion. They do loads of flippy shit. They're really fast in the ring. They have a 6.5-foot dinosaur. You know, the similarities are...
Oh, yeah.
Stackable.
Oh, yeah. Right there. Yeah. Right there. Anyway, up next, we had another episode of The Bubbly Bunch. Yeah, where this time they were trying to cheer up Sammy.
Dude.
And they all did their little, dance thing.
And I hope to God they do it as one of the Bubbly Bunch segments is where they actually come up with a Brady Bunch style song. Version. This is the story of a guy named Chris and these six crazy talented wrestling dudes. They moved into a new wrestling property. And then took everything over and made everybody lose. And they do it line by line.
Yeah,
practically right. Look, it's a work in progress. Okay. At Chris Jericho on Twitter. Prepare for a mail from me, homie.
Fozzie, all of a sudden, we've got Fozzie doing a heavy metal version. It's the story of a guy named Chris who met all these other guys on the road.
Copyright pending.
So the
whole point of the Bubbly Bunch this week was they were looking for something entertaining to do because Sammy was feeling a little bit down. I don't know if this is an actual dance or not. I don't know, am I out of touch with the cool kids? They were all like, let's do a flim flam. It had something to do with TikTok because they did a piss take of the TikTok logo up in the corner where it said flim flam instead of TikTok.
Okay.
There's a lot of people dancing on TikTok.
I'm not on social media.
I don't do the TikToks either outside of Killer Cross. That's the only TikTok I know. But my missus is mad into the TikToks, not Killer Cross TikToks, TikToks. So I've seen some of them via her, and there's people doing these dances. But anyway, I digress. The lads decide to do a dance together called the Flim Flam, which is... This is great. Can I say, by the way, Jake Hager was so happy doing that dance, it actually warmed my heart inside a little bit. But anyway, Jericho starts doing some Flim Flam. Then Ortiz starts doing some Flim Flam. We have a little bit of Hager doing some Flim Flam. Santana, a little bit of Flim Flam. Then we get to Sammy Guevara, who Flim Flams the fuck out of it. He's Flim Flamming all over the place. Flim Flamming in the air, Flim Flamming worms on the floor. Flim Flamity Flamming all over it. And Jericho, none liked it. It was the winner gets a bottle of hand sanitizer as well, by the way. That's the big...
Here's your bottle of hand sanitizer. Yeah,
Jericho's just like, he hops it off. He's Sammy, you goddamn... Just do the dance like a normal person, you goddamn show off. Gah! And then he shoves the sanitizer through the phone to him and stuff like that. I saw some people saying that I'd love if there was so much forethinking that when Sammy ends up eventually, like Jericho turns on him because the protege gets too good kind of thing. That I'd love if they were like, this is where the seed began, where Jericho started going, this guy's always trying to fucking upstage fucking, I don't like people upstaging me.
Anyway, this brings us on to the last match of the night, which is Kip Sabian versus Dustin Rhodes. And for some strange and God's unknown reason, Dustin decided to leave his brother a voice call, basically from saying if he doesn't win this match, he's done in the wrestling office.
It's the Cody Cave.
There is no stone walls. There are no bats hanging from it.
Look, there's one thing that I learned from watching any Batman movie is one simple thing. If you have more than two monitors mounted on a wall in a place that has no doors, it's a goddamn bat cave.
No, if you have walls that are made out of fucking rock, then it's a cave. If you have walls that are made out of plaster or wood or whatever the hell he has, then it's a goddamn office.
How do you know there's not rock behind the wood? How do you know it's not in a cave and he's just like, do you know what? I'm Cody. I'm a goddamn legend. I'm a goddamn Rhodes. And I'm not sitting here with some cavey walls. I'm doing this place up. Brandy, call our interior decorator.
Because I think it's far more likely that he was sitting somewhere inside and wherever they do their video editing stuff with his seat.
But they make him out like a superhero. So I feel this is like his...
Can we get back to the actual fucking
match? I feel like they're making it like a bat cave. But... Also because he's a little bit high life and he likes that kind of thing. There's a Ron Burgundy-esqueness to him. And I feel it's just that he wants his Batcave to smell of rich mahogany. And I believe that that has led to the Batcave. But most importantly, he's got five TV screens on the wall. Which makes it at least look like some sort of evil office supervillain or superhero headquarters.
Or he's trying too hard.
God damn it!
For those on the radio, his chair just dropped him again. It was hilarious. Anyway, on to the match at hand, which, as I said, is Kip Sabian versus Dustin Rhodes, with apparently Dustin Rhodes' wrestling career on the line. Because that's a thing.
Kip Sabian is one hell of a kid, evidently, and if I can't take him out, I shouldn't be in it.
So much of this match was actually, this was really good because at one point, Dustin blows out his knee. So much of it was Kip Sabian zeroing in on
Jericho
the
Jericho again, by the way, for pointing out. He's like, he spent his entire career dropping on his knees. He's like, nearly every goddamn move he does involves him dropping on his goddamn knees.
Yeah. you had Penelope Cruz. Penelope Ford getting involved a few times and Brandy refusing to do anything.
Yeah.
Which was like, and Shivani trying to cover. Well, you know, she had let go by the time Brandy got around there. No, she hadn't. She could have just run and done that spear thingy.
Brandy's in counseling now, remember. She's got all the Nightmare Collective stuff out of her head. She's been talking to people.
Is she still in counseling? We haven't seen
I don't think you're allowed film sessions of counseling. I think it was brought up literally. So you're like, she's in counseling and she's kind of, so she doesn't know she should get violent or not, but God damn it. Later on, she gets violent. And I have to say, whatever questionable wrestling level she's at, there's one thing she can do well is she can spear the fuck out of people. That was a good spear. It was a bloody good. She went to Penelope like a bloody lawn dart. It was great. Penelope. I also appreciated her costume change. It was like, I came down in jeans because I wasn't wrestling, but now I'm on the ring, so I'm wearing my leather shorts thing. It's good. I like that.
This would allow Dustin to get the take the advantage, whip Kip Sabian into a Code Red or Canadian Destroyer or whatever you want to call it, and drop him on his head and then pick up the victory. So Dustin Rhodes is not done with wrestling, because that would have been weird if he was after like that. It was kind of, what the
fuck? I feel it could still happen, because it could. We could end up having Dustin versus Cody too. Although, sorry.
Well, that would be.
That probably won't happen, isn't he against Lance Archer next week?
Oh, there's going to be a death.
Yeah,
in
he's
family.
Not going to retire. He's going to just
Caesar. Since we can't get our hands on you,
take out your brother, whatever his name was.
I was going to say Brutus, but that wouldn't have made sense because, you know, Brutus betrayed Caesar, so.
We're at the 50...
Oh, what was his name?
We're at the 54-minute mark, so we can still chat about some extra stuff for a minute or two, I suppose.
Oh, sorry, I'm just trying to remember the name of the historical Roman character who was a bastard. Well, he wasn't a bastard, he was all right, actually.
How eloquently put.
I can't remember. But he was a Roman, so by definition, he was a bastard. But for a Roman, he had his moments. Yeah. Fucking Romans. Anyway. what? Anyway, despite everything that's happening in the world at the moment, I think it's safe to say that both AEW and NXT are going to be continuing to put on decent shows. AEW, I think... Did they have everything taped, or are they still recording stuff?
They were shooting stuff in blocks. I don't think they've gone back live recording, to the best of my knowledge.
Yeah, whereas NXT...
Which is the reason... Oh, we forgot, actually, seeing as we have the minute or two extra to talk, we had MJF show up on camera as well. We forgot to mention that.
Yeah.
With a promo that I saw at Light a Lot...
Suffered a very serious gambling injury the last time he was around.
And even with that... I still gambled my little ass off for the rest of the night. So, but he opened up with all these comments about like what's going on with Corona and everything like that. And I saw a lot of people quite angry about the promo. And I'm like, he's a fucking heel. He went out and did heel shit. Like, that's literally what he did.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's what he does. Do you know what I mean?
His entire thing is that he is legitimately the most fucking bastardy bastard that ever
practically shoved his middle finger through a kid's head.
He practically
shoved his middle finger through a kid's face at a goddamn signing one day. Do you remember? And everyone was like, oh, I can't believe he did that. What the fuck do you expect?
I believe you're surprised.
Cody Rhodes even came out and was like, if you go to meet MJF, you meet MJF. And that's the way it goes. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Like I was saying, it's NXT are back to doing live shows, I think, because money changed hands and people changed their minds because money. Oh my God, man, that entire thing. I saw there was more news, but I admit there was more news bits up that I didn't quite see. Something about McMahon blaming Lesnar for a drop in ratings, but anyway, we can maybe talk about that next time. That's pretty much it for this week. As always, I'd just like to thank everybody that listened in. My thanks especially to Limerick City Community Radio, your city, your station, your voice, your willingness to let us pre-record and hand you in a show to put on the air.
My willingness to burn my computer.
I was going to say, unfortunately, due to technical issues, my metal show isn't going to be happening for a little bit, but fear not, because you can still catch myself and the Deadly One on Sundays for the Gorecast. Are we doing anything tomorrow?
No, it's postponed to next week. So Sunday we are doing Deathgasm, and I think there's one or two screeners in that will probably stick on the list.
Okay, well, that should be fun. So feel free to join us around 11:30.
Actually, no, screw. We'll do an Aussie horror special. How about that? There we go. Because Deathgasm's Aussie, okay, fair enough. If memory serves me correctly.
Anyway, that's pretty much it for now. We shall, of course, be back same wrestling time, same wrestling channel next week. For now, because he is the one-man shot
put contest. And he brings war!
We're going to play out with Wardlow's theme song. I'm the Giz. Say bye-bye, Giz. Johnny.
And everyone.
Okay. This is
Yeah.